Welcome back to the Paracast, the gold standard of paranormal radio. And now, here's Gene Steinberg.
We're asking Ed the tough questions here, and I think he understands that if we don't ask him, nobody will. Ed Komarek is explaining why he believes there's something very compelling about what's going on, that it's ET, and we have to consider the consequences. Okay, so we've seen a lot of different kinds of creatures in connection with UFOs. We've seen the insectoids. We've seen the so-called reptilians. We've seen humanoid. We've seen humans. So on the basis of that...
Yeah, well, we're assuming here, we're assuming that we're dealing with life forms that are from outside of this closed system called Earth. And that's a big leap for me. I think there are other possibilities that need to be examined as well.
It's not assuming. It's whether you accept these testimonies as true and credible. And if you do, then you build assumptions and you build concepts on that. That's what I'm
Well,
doing.
Yeah, I agree. And I think there are some very, very good, credible cases out there. But Ed, we're making an assumption that we're dealing with extraterrestrials. That is an assumption. We have no evidence at all to back that assumption up.
We have a complete disagreement as to what is evidence. I consider this testimony credible, and I consider it evidence. It would, in a court of law, people are sent to prison for life or hung.
Well, I agree with you, Ed, that there is something going on.
On witness testimony. So this witness testimony is credible. It was taken into a court.
But it's an assumption to go from a real event, which I think all three of us agree there is something high strange going on, and there has been probably for centuries. But isn't it an assumption to assume that these beings are coming from elsewhere? How do we know that? We don't. We're making a leap.
So, and some people, you know, the interesting thing about ecology, you know, Gene, was that my father was one of the early ecologists. In fact, Herb Stoddard was one of the founders of ecology. He was a good friend of Otto Leopold, you know, who was considered a founder of ecology, but Herb Stoddard was right there in with him, as well as Dr. Ali at University of Chicago. And my dad studied under Dr. Ali at the University of Chicago. And both Herb and Dad were museum collectors. And Dad said, you know, he had friends at the Field Museum there in Chicago, and he used to argue with the taxonomists. The taxonomists said, ecology is just BS. There's nothing to ecology. Show me a relationship. Relationships don't exist. Show me, you know, here I can touch this creature here. I can touch these feathers. I can touch this, you know, this mammal here. That's real, you know. There's no such thing as ecology. There's no such thing as a relationship. It's not real. And Dad could never convince the taxonomists to think any further beyond that, because they were in their little, you know, down in their little basements, and they were, you know, were dealing with animal skins and sorting out this bird from that bird and this animal from that animal. They weren't out there in nature watching what was going on in nature and how all these animals and plants were all in a relationship and are interacting amongst themselves. They can never make that jump. And it's the same thing with people in the UFO field. There's a lot of people who can't make the jump to exopolitics for the same reason. You know, you'll probably die, you know, not making that jump. Some people will make it, and it'll become an emerging field eventually. Academics will get in it and fill it out, and it will become a legitimate science, you know, just like ecology was. So not everybody is suited to make the jump, can make that jump, you know. And so what can I say? And so what I'm trying to do is talk to the people, you know, that can, that are willing to consider this evidence and think of what this evidence, where it leads, not necessarily as an assumption, or you can call it a speculation, but it's informed speculation based upon evidence, upon all this witness testimony and whatever. And here's the lay of the land, and here's where we're going. And that's important to know, to have some kind of a model or a roadmap, even if it's not 100% accurate, to guide us forward, you know, interactions. And that's what I'm trying to do. I'm trying to put out a roadmap, you know, that hopefully is 80% correct. And what I'm saying here is that evolution is going on in these other worlds. Top predators are evolving. They're coming here just like we're evolving on this planet. And they get into conflicts and fights and warfare. And I got a whole chapter on extraterrestrial warfare, where it seems like extraterrestrial craft are shooting at each other and even crashing, some of them crashing to Earth after a fight. And
okay, you know what? Let's just stop there. You just raised a lot of different possibilities. I'm going to ask you about that one, okay? So you're saying that ETs are fighting each other in our atmosphere. Is that right?
Yeah, I've got cases that go in fact, they go way back to the Vedas. Let me skip here, take the book here and skip back.
Let's jump into one of these just to get a sense.
This is a chapter on extraterrestrial warfare. Here's a quote from the Mahabharata, you know, probably 8 to 10,000 years old, maybe, you know, it was passed down, these legends or these myths were, you know, supposedly passed down, but it's very detailed. Gurkha, flying in his swift and powerful Vetma, hurled against the three cities of the Vishnus and the Ankaras a single projectile charged with all the power of the universe. An incandescent column of smoke and fire, as brilliant as 10,000 suns, rose in all its splendor. It was the unknown weapon, the Iron Thunderbolt, a gigantic messenger of death, which reduced to ashes the entire race of the Vishnus and the Andakis. The corpses were so burned as to be unrecognizable. Okay, I mean, this is, you know, it's also, you know, it's in the Bible. By the time Lot had reached Zoar, the sun had risen over the land, and the Lord rained down burning sulfur on Sodom and Gomorrah from the Lord out of the heavens. Thus he overthrew those cities and the entire plain, including all those living in the cities and also the vegetation in the land. But
that sounds like an attack against us. It doesn't sound like E.T. attacking E.T.
Well, if you get into the stuff from the Vedas, it's obvious that what's going on. In fact, here, I've got links on this. Here's a quote from this link that there was possibly a Kremlin-Trukhi war between Atlantis and Rama about 10,000 years ago. The Mahabharata is a virtual, I'm quoting
right,
here,
but why do we think that Atlantis, for example, relates to E.T.? Would it not be also possible that we created Atlantis
here, let me read a couple paragraphs of this quote. The Mahabharata is a virtual gold mining information relating to conflicts between gods who are said to have settled their differences, apparently using weapons as lethal as those we have now. Apart from blazing missiles, the poem records the use of other deadly weapons. Indra's dart is operated by a circular reflector. Then switched on, it produces a shaft of light, which when focused on any target, immediately consumes it with its power. In one exchange, the hero Krishna is pursuing his enemy Sava in the sky when Sava's Vetma, the Shab Buddha, is made invisible in some way. Undeterred, Krishna immediately fires off a special weapon. I quickly laid on an arrow which killed by seeking out sound. Many other terrible weapons are described quite matter-of-factly in the Mahabharata, but the most fearsome of all is the one used against the Vishrillis. The narrative records, this is one, Gurkha find a swap and deal, whatever. The nails in the hair fell out, pottery broke without apparent cause, and the birds turned white. After a few hours, all foodstuffs were infected. To escape from this fire, the soldiers threw themselves in streams to wash themselves and their equipment. Some said that Mahabharata is describing atomic war. References like this one are not isolated, but battles using a fantastic array of weapons and aerial vehicles are common in all the epic Indian books. One even describes the Vitma of Valak's battle on the moon. Check out this link for more quotes from the Hindu text and blah, blah, blah. And it's very clear that, you know, Oppenheimer was quoted, you know, when the bomb went off, you know, he quoted out of the Vedic scriptures, and he was asked, according to this reporter that I've quoted here, he was asked at the time, you know, if that was a first atomic bomb that was exploded, and he said yes in recent times. Because he studied history.
Right. And again, Ed, we're assuming that these are ETs in conflict with each other, when in fact maybe it's some sort of antediluvian civilization, and maybe it's humankind's ancient technology that we've lost. You are jumping, Ed, you are jumping and making an assumption that what we're dealing with here are races coming from other places to this planet. How do we know that we didn't evolve? How do we know dinosaurs didn't evolve?
I'm drawing on a whole different batch of data than you're drawing on, you know, which leads to two completely different perspectives.
You know, looking at both of what you're saying here, Ed, I got to do the break. Ed, got to do the break. So I'm not being rude. I got to do the break. What I'm seeing here is that we can take two pieces of data, and Chris is going to say, well, we could have had advanced civilizations here. And you could say, well, maybe two species of ET decided to use Earth as the place where they staged their attacks against one another. Ed Komarek, joining Gene and Chris. You're in
the Paracast.
Ray Perkins, a reclusive veteran burned out from the Gulf War, lives tortured by relentless, perplexing nightmares. Nightmares of a horrific battle in deep space and of a mysterious woman suffering in agony for her devastated world. A woman not yet born, calling across centuries to him. Then, a coincidence leads him to his destiny, his chance to alter the universe. Attack of the Rockoids. The former fiction editor for Star Wars and Indiana Jones, Robert Simpson, writes, "The soul of the novel Attack of the Rockoids lies in its heart and passion for building a convincing tale of a love that spans a galaxy. A thrilling story. Attack of the Rockoids is available now. Read a sample chapter and get a special discount off of the cover price at our website, rockoids.com. That's rockoids.com. Attack of the Rockoids, a novel in the grand science fiction tradition."
My name is Leslie, and I've had depression since I was a child. After being on Prozac for 20 years, I got onto the One World Way, and my need for Prozac was reduced by 50% within a few months. Now, after less than 1 year, I am completely off of Prozac. I learned that mercury is a toxin that causes brain damage and depression. By taking One World Way, I know that I've detoxified my brain of mercury and excess glutamate, and I'm now functioning with this dramatic improvement in my mood.
The power to change your life lies, in part, in the power you have to change your body's chemistry. Through diet and supplementation, you have the power to change your body's chemistry to support dramatic improvements in health and happiness. Nature has been, and always will be, mankind's first and only pharmacy to choose from. Change your chemistry and change your life with One World Way. Call 888-988-3325. That's 888-988-3325. Or visit OneWorldWay.com. That's OneWorld, W-H-E-Y.com.
Every day, nearly 3,000 families enter into foreclosure and face losing their home. If you're currently behind on your mortgage, you can still avoid foreclosure. You can save your home, but you need to act now. We're Allied State Foreclosure Services. We're experts in saving homes from foreclosure. With just one phone call to us, you can stop the foreclosure process, lower your monthly mortgage payments, and save your home. Call now. The call is free with no obligation. 1-800-597-8843. Call us if you've been threatened with foreclosure, denied loan modification, or missed a payment on your mortgage. If you've been a victim of a predatory loan or are upside down on your mortgage, even if you've lost your job and you're worried about losing your home, don't wait. Call us now and let us help you save your home. You've worked hard to build a life with your family. Let us help you keep your home. Call now before it's too late. 1-800-597-8843. 1-800-597-8843. 1-800-597-8843.
If you owe money to the IRS, you can't make the problem go away by yourself. But with the help of Dan Pilla, you can get your problem solved once and for all.
Hi, I'm Dan Pilla. For 30 years, I've helped thousands of people solve their tax debt problem, and I can help you solve yours too. We take a very simple but proven three-step approach to solving your problem. First, we stabilize IRS collection actions so you don't have to worry about the IRS seizing your bank account or paycheck. Next, we build a comprehensive plan to get your tax debt reduced to the fullest extent possible, sometimes even completely eliminated. And finally, we work with you every step of the way to get your problem solved once and for all. Call us for a free consultation. Call 1-800-346-6829. We'll work together to get your problem solved, guaranteed.
Dan Pilla has been protecting taxpayers from the IRS for 3 decades, and he can help you too. Call us today at 800-346-6829. That's 800-34-NO-TAX.
We'd like to hear from you. If you have a comment or question about the Paracast, send it to news@theparacast.com. That's news@theparacast.com. And don't forget to visit our famous Paracast community forums at forum.theparacast.com.
With Gene and Chris on the Paracast, Ed Komarek, new book out on exopolitics and the New World Disorder, and we're focusing here on the theory that things reported in ancient texts are describing two factions or species of ET going after each other. And I have to wonder here, if they are really so concerned with fighting one another, why pick this place? Why pick our atmosphere? Do it in space. Do it on their own world. Why come here?
Okay, we can't look at any particular bit of evidence, you know, on its own. We have to correlate it with other evidence and hope comes with some kind of a model or understanding of what's going on. And that's what I'm trying to do here is that I started in this chapter with these ancient cases and right up to the present. And what I've done is, you know, in this book is not really all my work. I mean, I've written maybe a third of this book and the rest of it is quoted material. You know, that's why I pretty much published it on my own because I probably have trouble, you know, with a major publisher, you know, with that, you know, because there's so many people and getting permissions, you know, just really difficult from so many people. So I quote this article, it quotes Eisenhower, you know, interestingly, Manhattan chief scientist Robert Edwin was known to be familiar with ancient centuries literature. In an interview conducted after he watched the first atomic test, he quoted from the Bhagavad Gita, "Now I've become death, the destroyer of worlds." I suppose we all felt that way. When asked in an interview at Rochester University 7 years after the Alamogordo nuclear test, whatever it was, the first atomic bomb ever to be detonated, his reply was, "Ancient cities whose brick and stone walls have literally been petrified, that is, fused together, can be found in India, Ireland, Scotland, France, Turkey, and other places. There's no logical explanation for the verification of the stone forging cities except for an atomic blast." And there's another article I've got here, and an article called "The Ancient City Found in India Radiated from Atomic Blast." It stated, "Radiation is still so intense that the area is highly dangerous. A heavy layer of radioactive ash and rejects the stand."
Right. And Ed, your point is taken here that there is evidence of a form of high technology and warfare from ancient times. But again, it's an assumption. To consider this as evidence of extraterrestrial visitation and extraterrestrial conflict.
This is part of the evidence, but that's why in this chapter I give you other bits and pieces that fill out the picture. This one item is not evidence of that in itself, but when it relates to all this other material, then it as a whole becomes very compelling. So you have to see me through, okay? So the next case I've got here is just fast forward here to April 14th, 1561. There's a Hans Glaser woodcut from 1566, 5 years after the event, in the same year as the Bestor report. At sunrise on the 14th of April, 1561, the citizens of Nuremberg beheld a very frightful spectacle. The sky appeared to be filled with cylindrical objects from which red, black, orange, and blue-white discs and globes emerged. Crosses and tubes resembling cannon barrels also appeared, whereupon the objects promptly began to fight one another. After about an hour of battle, the objects seemed to catch fire and fell to earth, where they turned to steam. A broadsheet that dates from 1561 in the Weber collection of Switzerland, Zurich, Central Library, describes an ancient battle. Look, at sunrise, many people witnessed large numbers of dark red, blue, and black globes or plates near the sun, some three in a row, now and then four in a square, also some alone, and amongst these globes, some blood-colored crosses were seen. The document also refers to two great tubes in which three, four, and more globes were seen. They then all began to fight each other, and this went on for an hour until they fell from the sun and sky down to earth, producing a lot of steam. Beneath the globes, a long object that looked like a great black spear was also described as seen. And so that Nuremberg case is, you know, very interesting and compelling. And then in 1608, the ETs were at it again with another aerial battle between extra craft and France. Occupants were seen as well.
Okay, but let me ask you a question here.
Here you're saying occupants.
Ed, I grant there are cases there that show some kind of conflict. We don't know, of course, whether it's two races, whether it's two factions of the same race, whether Spaceship A had a disagreement with Spaceship B. And if that's been happening, all these violent encounters, what about the present day? We're not hearing about that stuff in recent times, are we?
Yeah, we're going. You know, that's what.
How
you
recent
hear
are we talking
through,
about?
You know, because we've got to look at the evidence in its totality, not any particular piece or part of it, and try to drive our conclusions from that, because we can't. We've got to draw it from the vast amount of data that's available to us. And so what I'm saying here is the occupants were seen here in 1608. 1608, the ETs were at it again. In August of 1608, people of southern France from Marseille, Chicanot witnessed a true wave of UFOs reported in a chronicle from the title described the scores, the terror blows in the sky over Martinique. An aerial battle took place with left an odor of saltpeter or sulfur. the inhabitants of Nice saw three strange luminous vessels moving at high speed above the city. The vessels stopped close to a fortress, then went down into the sea, causing the water to boil and release a reddish-colored vapor. To the amazement of onlookers, two humanoid beings with large heads and very luminous eyes and reddish scales connected to their vessels by tubes passed several hours in some kind of strange work. Also off Goa, an aerial battle took place between flying objects and other craft emerging from the sea. The soldiers of the fortress delivered 800 blows from their guns to drive off the intruders.
Okay, so let's just look at it this way. Ed, we can go on and on. The point being, yes, we have cases showing conflict, and Chris says there are more recent cases. How recent? What about 10, 20, 30 years ago are we seeing cases where UFOs were evidently fighting one another?
Here I am. I'm moving right up into this. I began searching the Internet. The first case of, well, actually, you know, how I got onto this was a local contactee told me that his ET friends were getting into it with another race, and that one of them had been wounded. That's not a lot of evidence, but I put it back on my mind, but it kind of started working on it. So then I got on the Internet, and I started researching. Here's one of the first cases I found. I began searching the Internet, and the first possible ET conflict I found was UFO activity over Indiana. I read that, and I got a link to it.
I understand, but let's just stop with researching on the Internet. We understand historical documents and stuff that happened a long time ago. I think those of us who have spent a lot of time on the Internet, I won't say I invented the Internet, but I've been on the Internet since the 1980s, you learn that anybody can put up something with a link and claim it's true. And because you see a link to a case doesn't mean that case is true. What you need is to look at the facts of the case, find other links, other stories that confirm the first one, maybe talk to the witnesses if you can, and see if there is some published evidence or other information.
That's what I've done, but you got to hear me out.
Okay, go ahead. Okay, so you found these cases on the Internet. What did you do to verify the cases?
We've got a couple hours to work through this. Here, lights similar to those seen over Phoenix also appeared on Tuesday and Wednesday, April 14, 15, 2008, over the towns of Kamokuo and Logansport in northern Indiana. Those lights were accompanied by loud sounds, an odd metallic odor in the air, and the appearance of military aircraft and deployment.
No, I need to ask you the source first. Ed, I need to ask you the source first. I'm not trying to be rude here. I understand you can go on and read these cases for 3 hours. You know, we're not going to do that because we can't do it. We just want sample cases. And
James,
please, Ed.
Let me present the evidence, and then we can discuss the case. But
all right, before we do that, you've already read this case, and before we do that, we need to break, and then we'll come back. We have Ed Komarek. With Gene and Chris, you're in
the Paracast.
Are you tired of searching for great talk radio?
Something more important.
Search no more. We are the GCN Radio Network.
Graphic Converter is the image manipulation tool for the rest of us. It does not use any database. You get full control of all your files. Want to view the images of a folder? Drag it into Graphic Converter and a powerful browser opens up to show your image files. You could use it for slideshows. You could use it to import images from digital cameras or from scanners. Need to do some image editing? You can do that too in Graphic Converter. Also print catalogs. Convert from so many formats, I can't even list them. Download now to see if Graphic Converter is good for you, like 1.5 million other users. Guess what? You could save money when you buy Graphic Converter. Use the coupon code NIGHTOWL. Use the coupon code NIGHTOWL to get a special price for Graphic Converter. Go to LemkeSoft.com. That's LemkeSoft.com. LemkeSoft.com. LemkeSoft.com.
America, land of the free. But how free can you be, really, when internet viruses and malware can attack your computer? Sure, you have antivirus protection, but it's not free, is it? Until now. Now, Zone Alarm offers free antivirus protection. And independent studies show that Zone Alarm provides better malware protection than even Norton and McAfee. And they're not free, are they? Declare your freedom and go to GetBetterForFree.com. That's GetBetterForFree.com.
Hi, this is Ted Anderson. Have you ever wondered why banks, stockbrokers, investment advisors won't talk about gold IRAs? They've been available since 1986, yet the financial industry won't recognize the value of gold for your retirement. Gold has outperformed paper investments, yet no word about IRAs. If you would like to have gold for your retirement, call 800-686-2237. Don't get left behind by rising inflation and low returns. Call 800-686-2237. Secure your future and call 1-800-686-2237.
Clear out your pantry and make room in your closets. You're going to need this space for these hot August deals at BePrepared.com. Going on now, save 23% on Provident Pantry Scrambled Egg Mix or 28% on freeze-dried strawberry slices. New this month, baking cocoa for daily use or long-term storage. Buy one of the Provident Pantry baking or dessert combos and save up to $25 off individual component pricing. Or add some weight to your water storage at BePrepared.com. The ultimate 55-gallon water barrel combo is on sale this month for only $94.99. Food and water storage is great, but how are you going to cook it in an emergency? The popular Volcano 2 collapsible stove. Save $27.96 off MSRP. Go to BePrepared.com for more details and more August savings now through August 31st. Call 800-999-1863 to experience exceptional customer service and BePrepared.com's low price guarantee. That's 800-999-1863. The choice is clear. Be unprepared or BePrepared.com.
The summer specials are on at HHA, Herbal Healer Academy. Current customers know this is the time to save big at herbalhealer.com. And you customers, welcome to the web's best place to save on vitamins, minerals, and more. Right now, Herbal Healer's summer specials include our 500 parts per million colloidal silver, all sizes on sale. Liquid CalMag Vitamin D and Organic Iodine, CoQ10 with Hawthorn, Colon Enhancer, Super 2, Natural Laxative, our exceptional product Tonixin, Memory Power, and Super Male and Femplex, all on sale for summer at HerbalHealer.com. Also get 10% off on the Herbal Healer Academy Survival Course, information that might save your life. Enjoy same-day shipping and free online newsletter. Log on to our nation's leader in supplying quality natural medicine and education since 1988, Herbal Healer Academy at HerbalHealer.com.
This is Hilly Rose, and I hope that you do listen to the Paracast because you will learn a great deal about the paranormal.
With Gene and Chris, Ed Komarek joining us. We're basically going back and forth on some cases, but before we go into more details of this case, you found the link on the internet. The link to what? Is this a newspaper story? What is this report? What's it based on?
This is a case that was investigated by Bill Nell and other
people. All right,
people.
Stop Bill Nell. Stop Bill Nell.
Yeah, I know.
Bill Nell is a fake. Bill Nell is
too.
A fraud. We've proven that on the Paracast. We've had him on the show. He hung up because he couldn't answer questions. He made up stories about being quoted in different publications for which there was no record. There are people who claim that Bill Nell has taken their material, misappropriated that material, and offered his own versions for sale. We had Frank Warren discussing it.
So before we go on,
Bill Nell is out of the picture. If you want to quote Bill Nell, forget about it. We're not talking about Bill Nell. Forget about Bill Nell. As far as I'm concerned, his credibility, Ed, please, drop Bill Nell and give me another source. Give me a source like a newspaper. Give me a source like a UFO organization like a MUFON. Give me something a little more authoritative.
Okay. Hey, you know Roger Marsh, don't you? You know, I mean, he's a credible guy. He's MUFON's new editor, right, of the journal?
Yeah.
Okay, here's a case from Roger Marsh. I've got
Let's talk about that.
As link 148, posted by Roger Marsh, of a possible dogfight over New Jersey. The witness said planes were traveling across the sky. In contrast to these planes, the objects were moving at a credible speed, speeds that, as far as I know, are inhumanly possible. I'd estimate thousands of miles per hour. I can estimate these incredible speeds due to the known limited speed of commercial airliners. Furthermore, these objects were moving in many different directions. I mean, right angles, reverse direction on a dime, vertically, horizontally, etc. During a sparing few incidents, these white lights would suddenly flash an red or an orange hue as well. I would describe these movements as if a dogfight, seemingly interacting with each other at times. Mind you, all while planes were traveling through the sky. Okay, and we go to that's Roger Marsh, you know, MUFON. This UFO dog fighter text case is recent. I keep finding these cases for this chapter by trying different word searches and whatever. I walked outside at 2 a.m. on September 9, 2011 to make sure my car was locked and saw this weird blue glowing orb shoot across the sky toward a stationary white orb and a weird reddish glowing orb. Then the blue orb shot up a beam at the red orb. Then the red orb kind of shot off for 30 seconds and the white orb turned a reddish color. All about the same time. The blue and the red objects started shooting lights at each other. After a minute of this battle, I watched the sky kind of flash and like thunder for about 5 seconds, and these objects were moving in weird directions, stopping and then changing direction. After the flashing, the red orb was gone. A second red orb appeared that I assumed was the first red orb that disappeared, and they both shot off toward the northeast after a 5-minute dogfight.
Okay, so where does this case come from? Who's the source for this? The witness or some organization?
I have to go to the link. You can look it up on the internet, but
yeah, I think I saw that one in one of Rogers.
I've got it linked. It's 149 in the back here. Let me look in my index now.
Sure.
In the back of this book, I've got 169 references. You know, to all the material in this book. Okay. Now, let me see. That's 149.
Okay, so 149.
Okay,
what is the source of 149?
UFO Dogfight Over Texas. It's HHHPWGodlikeProductions.com, message 16. Okay. Here's another one. I found the following article, the 1989 Battle of the Saucers in Russia, footnote 150 from still another word search on the Internet.
Okay, but let me ask you a question here. Just a word search doesn't give me a source. This story about something in Russia. Is it from a newspaper clipping? Is it from somebody who investigated the case?
Okay.
What's the source?
This was an investigation. This is called, the article is called 1989 Battle of the Saucers in Russia. I got it footnoted as footnote 150. Okay, let me go see what 150 is. What's really nice about this, you know, this book is it's, you know, been read on a computer. You can just click on the links and you'll go there. But
One source I do see here, by the way, is something called the UFOcasebook.com is a source of my material. Okay?
This one's UFOs about period com OD UFO folklore and legend battle 1989. Okay? Let me just read a couple paragraphs. In the following article, the 1989 Battle of Saucers in Russia, from Stillworth, Stubbleton claims that hundreds of people watched the group of 6 silver saucers fight against 1 golden UFO. The UFOs all made incredible moves in the skies, at times flying as low as 5,000 feet, making a good view for onlookers. Beams of red light constituted the weapon of choice. Witnesses who were interviewed by, here's a guy, you know, you can look this guy up, I guess he's Russian, S-I-C-H-E-N-K-O, claimed that the outnumbered golden UFO was finally defeated, although giving a gallant effort. The defeated UFO lost altitude, finally crashing to the ground. The 6 victorious UFOs disappeared into the skies. Stubbleton claims the golden UFO crashed into a bog on a military test range, and the area was zoned off to everyone except military. And, you know, I even get people even contact me with cases. I've received an email from Janice about a person who saw another UFO dogfight approximately 20 years ago. The grandmother and my son's best friend watched an aerial dogfight between UFOs. It was way up in the sky. She saw UFOs explode, and it was a lot more detailed, but I do not remember it.
Okay, so we have a bunch of cases here that appear to represent UFOs engaged in dogfights and other battles. But then we come back to it again. We have these things happening on Earth or in our atmosphere, but we're assuming they're coming from out there. They came here to fight each other here. What's the sense of that? If they want to fight each other, why do they use Earth as an intermediary? I'm trying to understand.
We fight. The Americans fight all over the globe. We're in Afghanistan. We're in Iraq. Why do we go to Iraq to fight? Why are we fighting in Afghanistan?
Point. Yeah, but we're going to that population's home country, okay? We go to Iraq, we're fighting the people who live in Iraq. We go to Afghanistan, we fight the people who live in Afghanistan. But now someone from Zeta Reticuli gets involved in a dispute with somebody from another planet 30, 40, 50 light years away, and they travel all the way to Earth to pursue their battle?
Hey, when the Russians went in Afghanistan, we traveled all the way around the globe to, you know, to support the insurgents.
Yeah, but that's our own planet, okay? We're engaged in tribal warfare on our own planet. Okay, let me continue. Let me continue, please. Ed, we're engaged in tribal warfare on our own planet. We know that. okay? And sometimes we use a particular war or conflict as a proxy for the real battle that's going on elsewhere. It's all happening here. We live here, and we fight here, and we live and we die here. But now we're talking about E.T. Ed, let me finish. Now we're talking about E.T. from who knows where, Zeta Reticuli, Alpha Centauri, whatever. They're 20, 40, 100 light years from us. Race number A from this planet, this civilization, fights race number B. Not out there, but they come all the way here. Where's the logic in that, says Mr. Spock?
It's the same logic you're just using.
I'm talking about us. We live on Earth, man. Ed, we live on Earth. We fight on Earth. We fight other tribes on Earth. It's all happening on our home world.
Now
you're talking about is, okay, so are we saying that the UFO people, whoever they are, come from here? Is this their own world?
Okay, can I finish now?
Sure,
okay,
go ahead.
Can I make my statement? Okay, my statement is these extraterrestrials, they don't just live on one planet. They have bases on other planets. They have bases here on Earth, underwater and underground. They project their power not on across one planet, but across the galaxy.
Okay, so this is one place where they're occupying us. They're occupying Earth.
Now, you're not letting me finish.
Okay, I'm going to ask you a question to explain when you respond.
Ed,
I understand.
I'll let you finish, Gene.
I'll let you finish, but I want you to amplify this question. So we're suggesting here that E.T. has set up a base here, or more than one race of E.T.s has set up some kind of military installation here, that they've occupied planet Earth, and now when the rival race or civilization comes here, they fight them, and we'll go on. We have Ed Komarek with Gene and Chris.
Okay,
you're in.
I know where you're going to come from. You're going to say, where's the evidence? Okay, then I'll go to Charles Hawkins.
We need to close this segment. With Gene and Chris, you're in.
The Paracast.
The GCN Radio Network, providing the world with hard-hitting talk radio. GCN. Great talk radio starts here.
Whether it's personal mail, whether it's business email, you want reliable, dependable delivery, freedom from spam, freedom from viruses. Well, Polaris Mail offers professional email hosting services for your personal or small business use. Each account uses 25 gigabytes of storage, an easy-to-use webmail interface, and full mobile sync. Sign up today for a 30-day free trial at PolarisMail.com, PolarisMail.com.
So here's what happened. I was placing an order online. The site went down. It just stopped responding. It took hours before it returned, but I'd already placed the order with another company. If your site goes down, you could lose business. And if you have a business or personal site, you'll want to know it's easy to run and it will stay online. At iWeb, your site is hosted on one of the most reliable networks in the world. Check it out. iWeb.com. That's iWeb.com.
American gardeners and fellow patriots, make the right choice with your money, time, and your family food supply. Choose 100% pure heirloom seeds in the Survival Seed Vault from MyPatriotSupply.com. Why spend more? The Survival Seed Vault from MyPatriotSupply.com is only $37.95 and includes 20 varieties of pure, hardy, easy-to-grow heirloom seeds. Yes, only $37.95. That's 70% less than our competitors. You could buy 3 Survival Seed Vaults for less than one of theirs. The Survival Seed Vault from MyPatriotSupply.com includes detailed planting and seed saving instructions and ships same day. Plus, all orders over $49 ship free. MyPatriotSupply.com is American owned by patriots like you, passionate about freedom and preparedness. Call now, 866-229-0927. That's 866-229-0927. Or discover more emergency preparedness items when you order at MyPatriotSupply.com. Choose the original. Choose the Survival Seed Vault at MyPatriotSupply.com.
Heart and Body Extract continues to receive positive testimonials from people who have experienced amazing results, like Reed.
I just wanted to send you a quick but a very big thank you for Heart and Body Extract. I've been on the formula for nearly a month now, And the improvement in the circulation of my leg has been simply amazing.
Reed was facing a tough choice.
I was facing surgery due to the severity of 100% blocked arteries in both my legs. And my decision, waiting for surgery, to say no and try heart and body extract instead, has been thankfully the right decision.
And the result?
I can now walk up steps without noticeable pain.
Order Heart and Body Extract at 866-295-5305, 866-295-5305, or hbextract.com. Heart and Body Extract, for a long and healthy life.
The food storage industry leader has done it again.
Introducing FDG Clubs and Survival Bucks from the Freeze Dry Guy. For over 39 years, the Freeze Dry Guy has served various government agencies and the private sector with the finest in storable foods and emergency rations. If you've wanted to build emergency food supplies but couldn't afford it,
now you can.
Go to freezedryguy.com, click on products, and look for the Freeze Dry Guy Clubs to pay as you go.
Now you can build food storage without going into debt.
Choose from a payment range of $95 to $450 per month.
Our clubs work with everyone's budget.
Plus, when you join Freeze Dry Guy Clubs, you'll get additional rewards. For example, this month, get 10% back in survival bucks on all purchases in the Freeze Dry Guy product line, plus free shipping within the lower 48 states on any order amounts. Hurry, go to freezedryguy.com or call 866-404-3663. That's freezedryguy.com or call 866-404-3663. The Freeze Dry Guy, the best you can buy.
This is Jerome Clark, author of the UFO Encyclopedia and other books. You're listening to the Paracast.
With Gene and Chris, you're in the Paracast, and we're basically engaging a hot discussion here with Ed Komarek, who says this is evidence that different races of ET are here in conflict with one another, or maybe it's a kind of loose cooperation that occasionally breaks out into open warfare. But you kind of think, if they're this advanced, Ed, advanced enough to come here to visit us 20, 30, 100 light years away, this is where you get plenty of time to answer. And that is, wouldn't they have the power to pretty much destroy our planet if they engaged in open warfare with one of their own kind or a rival race?
Well, once you understand that, you know, as below, so above, it all starts to make sense, you know, because basically what seems to be going on is that other predator races like ourselves, you know, are evolving and leave the planet, you know, once we develop the technology, just like sailing ships, you know, allowed us to travel across the oceans, which were at one time considered impassable. And then we took our conflicts and colonized all these other people all around the world. So what's going on, it's just much, on a much larger scale, where you have other types of predators evolving off of their planets and getting into fights and squabbles. I mean, you don't right off the bat, just because you got spacefaring technology doesn't necessarily make you a nice race, you know, means that you all of a sudden you found true love. I mean, you've got unconditional love. And there's resources, and they're apparently, from all this evidence that, you know, that a lot of it, which I've got in this book, that the extraterrestrials, the neighborhood is quite populated by quite a few different races, and they don't necessarily get along all the time. And it's, our situation is kind of like a third world country surrounded by superpowers. If one superpower, like the Russians, meddles in Afghanistan, then we stop them by supporting the insurgency. If we meddle in Afghanistan, you know, then the Pakistanis and the Taliban undermine our activities there. So even a country as powerful as the United States can't cut it in Afghanistan right now. In fact, we're losing. It's because of these other countries and superpowers, the Russians, you know, look at Syria, you know, we're trying to support the revolution of Syria. The Russians are supporting the regime of Syria and whatever. So, you know, we're kind of caught, Syria's kind of caught in the middle between superpowers. So a superpower just can't waltz over and take over a dinky little old country, because there's other superpowers that are going to counterman that. And so it seems like the exact same thing is just happening on a much larger scale. And that's why ETs fly here sometimes, because they got bases and they've got resources here and whatever, and interest. And if you want the evidence, then we get into my chapter called The Tall White Extraterrestrial.
That's a good point. Then maybe we should jump off of that, because I have an obvious question, which is, Okay. If E.T. is visiting us, just visiting us, you wouldn't think they would care about conflict with someone else. But if they're using our planet as a base for whatever reason, they have a military interest in being here. They have a cultural interest in being here. If another race, a rival race, has a similar cultural interest, what is that interest? Why are they here?
You know, why do we have a base in the Philippines? You know, why do we have a base in Japan? You know, project our power, you know. This is the same thing. If we move to other planetary systems, I mean, we may even have a base on the moon right now, according to some of the testimony that I've got in the book, that Project Horizon was a 1962 Army report saying that it was essential that we have a base on the moon and occupy the high ground. And all of a sudden, everything went, you know, everything went quiet. So we're essentially doing that same thing already. We've got a base, you know, just outside the atmosphere right now, you know, that everybody knows about. But I'm also saying there's a secret space fleet that's much more advanced, but that, you know, that's the whole other area. But let's go to some of the evidence. You know, you want that, well, you know, where am I deriving my assumptions from? So,
and I think it's very important because, Ed, if we don't look at that, we won't understand your point of view or how good the evidence is. But I want to ask you a favor here. Because of the fact that we have limited time, which is why I keep pushing you with questions, not just to interrupt you, it's because we have to move along. If you spend 40 minutes on every piece of logic, we'll never get anywhere. So if you're going to mention this next chapter in the evidence, give us one case as an example, and then we can talk about it.
Well, what you got to do is the Charles Hall case. Charles Hall was claimed to have been a weatherman, in which he's got plenty of evidence that he was on Nellis Air Force Base, you know, just up from Indian Springs in the valley up there. And he encountered the tall whites there in 1962, when he was a weatherman out on the ranges. And he says that they had a base there of about 300 individuals, because one time he saw them all outside of the base one time, whatever. So he assumed there were about 300 at the most. And they told him that that base was a stopover for them traveling to other solar systems, and that they had to come by and repair their craft. Their craft is not advanced as some of these extraterrestrials. They don't warp space and time and can appear and disappear instantly somewhere else in the galaxy or something. They travel much faster than the speed of light, in which he describes all this and whatever. But they've got that base in which Nellis was created around it. He also said there's a gray base also there at Area 55, wherever that is. We all know where Area 51 is. So right in that area of Nellis, that Nellis surrounds now, apparently are two different bases, according to Charles Hall. Now, I got so interested in this case because there are people like Tom Fox who's seen these tall whites float down from Indians, from Wheeler Pass down to Indian Springs, and also in Las Vegas, and some of the Galman casinos, because they like to get out and get out of the base, and they look enough like us with a little bit of disguise. They look like albinos. In fact, Jerry Hinkle ran into one playing some kind of a really sophisticated game, and she just thought it was an albino. He was really tall, and I think he had blue eyes and kind of whitish hair, and he was surrounded by five really mean-looking Nellis security guards. And I've got enough other cases that I feel that have filled me in on, seem to have confirmed parts of Charles' story, that I went out there myself and found another two or three cases involved here. So I'm willing to go out on a limb on Charles Hall and his experiences because we got a lot of backup. But this is what I'm talking about. You know, what I've tried to do in this book is so much information of my 40 years of experience. I'm trying to pull it together in some kind of a concise, you know, way that makes sense. And that's why I started off the way I did with Evolution of Other Worlds. And I work all the way to, you know, ATs fighting and this kind of stuff. But
well, what are they fighting over? What is all this research and correlation? So, I mean, what do you think is the conflict?
They're fighting all the time. Now, like Charles Hall said, that the tall whites and the grays don't get along. And if a gray gets too close to their children or whatever, they kill them in a heartbeat. And these tall whites are pretty tough people from, you know, what Charles Hall was saying. And some people got killed in those early days in the early 60s while they were acclimating to them. The military was, you know, just started getting involved with them at that time. But that's apparently why they put Nellis, where it is today, is around these two bases, you know. And then they proceeded to interact, according to Charles Hall. The military started getting involved with technological transfer programs with the tall whites. In fact, he was in one of their shuttles, and inside of one of the shuttles that the tall whites were using, they saw stamps on those seats and stuff from our major aerospace companies and whatever. And so they were willing to exchange some technology, but not their deep space technology, but just shuttle technology that could take you to the moon or Mars or whatever, but not in the deep space, but in order to get resources. You know, and like Charles said, the laws of economics just don't get thrown out the windows because, you know, you can travel in space. It's a lot cheaper for them to get resources and trade with for resources for us through the military and whatever for them to ship it into their base. So that's what they're, you know, doing there. So they're a contingent that's not that involved with us. They just have a base here that's a stopover point, whatever, whereas the Greys are much more involved. You know, they seem to be abducting people and running genetic experiments on people, trying to create hybrids between themselves and us and whatever. So you've got a completely different situation there.
I'll tell you something here. As you probably know, the subject of UFO abductions and possible genetic experiments is highly debatable in the field. There are different points of view about that. There's also the theory, and I think Kevin Randall has mentioned it, that the UFO abduction researcher tends to attract the cases that appeal to their kind of investigation. We also have other possibilities for why people may experience abductions, which are not necessarily related to physical capture or kidnapping by entities or beings from another world. There are other explanations here, but you're making the assumption here for the sake of this argument and the sake of this book, because we don't have time to sit here and talk about abductions all day. You're making the assumption here that a lot of these cases represent real encounters with the Greys, that the Greys are not very friendly people, that they have all sorts of evil things in mind, that they take people
from out of their bedrooms and do genetic experiments. They just think of us as property. I mean, that's just the way they are. You know,
okay,
like
they don't respect the human species as being independent and free. They feel they can just kidnap us, take us aboard their ship in the middle of the night, and then engage in genetic experiments for whatever reason. Let's get into more of this in a moment. We have Ed Komarek with Gene and Chris. You're in
the Paracast. America's number one source for independent talk radio for over a decade. We are the GCN Radio Network.
Hi, Ted Anderson announcing a great way to listen to radio on the telephone. By calling 760-569-7700, you'll be hearing GCNLive.com programs in seconds. Come to GCNLive.com, find your favorite host's dedicated phone number, and hear them 24/7. You heard me right. Every show has a dedicated phone number. Stop by GCNLive.com and bookmark their number today. And again, that's 760-569-7700. We the people grow cotton, weave fabric, engrave ink, embed strips and fibers to protect from counterfeit and carting to a private bank, having it lent back at interest, forcing taxes to service debt. This capitalism, or was Jefferson correct when stating a central bank issuing the public currency is a greater menace to the liberties of the people than a standing army? Ted Anderson, I'm placing a free silver dollar in a book that explains our monetary system. Call for your copy, 800-686-2237. It's time to understand the system. Call 800-686-2237. That's 800-686-2237.
The worst drought in 50 years continues, and the first 6 months of 2012 marks the hottest half year on record. 78% of the Midwest Corn Belt is in drought conditions. Not only corn, but soy, alfalfa, fruits, vegetables, and wheat are all impacted, raising prices. The cost to feed livestock is forcing farmers and ranchers out of business, blowing up your food prices. The only strategy to counter this is to freeze your food cost at today's prices by getting your own supply of foods from eFoods Direct now. As the price of raw ingredients increases, eFoods will have to raise prices too. Now is the time to get your supply. I recently increased my supply from eFoods Direct because we've all known this was coming. You know about their delicious long-term storable foods. The fact is you can eat at any time to save money today. And because it stores for 25 years, you're locking in today's prices and avoiding the rising food cost. Don't wait. Call 800-409-5633 or go to eFoodsDirect.com/Alex. Call 800-409-5633 or eFoodsDirect.com/Alex. You can bet your life on eFoods Direct.